You'll just have to do a ball pit. Some of the women may have pocketbooks with pens. So.
I see.
Thank you.
I'll tell you a funny story about that once. The last time I went over to Israel, I took one to the Tarlot.
Yeah.
So this person, he was renting the car, and somebody just says, where are you going? He says,
Those of you who were here a little bit earlier know that this was a last-minute share. We weren't sure how long we were going to be here, so the confession I got was that if it didn't relate to family, it was okay. I did not realize, and the reason I chose this topic was because we are heading now into Parashat Vayetzeh, and we're going to look at a segment in Vayetzeh, but I didn't realize at the time that I did it that today was going to be Rosh Chodesh and that we were going to say those words, Moshivi Akeret Abayit Im Habanim Smecha. Okay, that isn't a shir in and of itself and is extremely family related. That David HaMelech feels that of all the things that God can change on a dime, the one that is most striking and most amazing and most yeshuadik, most salvation bringing, is Moshivi Akeret Habayit Im Habanim Smecha, taking a woman who has no children and placing her in the middle of a home and she becomes the joyous mother of children. In our context, however, it brings to mind the book, the Sefer, that was written by Rav Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal, which I think in this audience probably, I think most of you are familiar with, and it's called Im Habanim Smecha. Interestingly enough, when it was translated into English, the title reads Im Habanim Smecha because it doesn't capture, joyous mother of children would never capture what he's talking about. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the book, the man, the title, and then learn a piece of Chumash from his perspective. Okay? Rav Teichtal, for those of you who don't know, was a Hungarian Rav. He was one of these prodigious children that you read art scroll books about that, you know, knew everything by the age of 13. But it's true that by the age of 22, he had already achieved 3 smichot from great Rabbanim and Dayanim in Hungary and Czechoslovakia as well. And he ended up in a community called Pishtian, which is a small suburb of Czechoslovakia. And it was known for, I think it's still known for its mineral baths. And because it was a spa area, many, many people used to come there. Many Rabbanim came there. It was very good for arthritis. I guess a lot of Rabbanim had arthritis. That was what I assume from reading this book. And they got to know Rav Teichtal, and even though he was very young, he became very quickly recognized as a genius in scholarship and a person of great inner spirit and depth and compassion. So, what makes him special? What makes him special is that he grew up with a traditional ultra-Orthodox upbringing, which means that at that time in history, that's when anti-Zionism became associated with ultra-Orthodox. There were a lot of historical factors for that. It's not so simple. We can't so quickly be against it. There were many reasons that propelled that association. But in any case, he grew up with that upbringing, and he promoted it. His speeches were very what we would call anti-Zionist. And then things started to change. In the 1930s, just before the Nazis came to power, he opened an institution called Moria, or Moriah. Every time I read about his goals in that institution, I always say he was the forerunner of Yeshiva University. In his own words, The purpose of Moriah was to take the 50 best scholars in Europe and train them to be the Rabbanim of the future, to deal with Europe coming into a new era of Judaism. I feel like today they would be called the Teichtal Fellows, you know, very much a forward-thinking person. He had to close the school because in 1938 the Nazis came into Czechoslovakia. He was in Pištyn at that time, and they took over with their insidious tactics of scaring and terrorizing everybody. And ultimately, after a few years of that, in 1942, the deportations began, and it began, and every community was different, but in Pištyn, the way it began was with the abduction of teenage girls. Those were the first ones who were deported. So you sent a teenage girl out to the marketplace, and she never returned. And we know what happened after that. That will become important in a little while. Let me just finish his biography. He and 10 families had to hide in the loft of a Beis Medrash in Pištyn. And from the loft, this was after many, many heroic attempts at saving people and at getting people out, but ultimately he was forced to hide himself. And from the cracks in the loft, he saw some of the terrorizing, inhumane things that were done to people. And he took a vow, and we'll see how this came about soon, he took a vow that if he would ever get out of this, he would write a sefer doing a 360 degrees on his philosophy. And he said, I understand now that it's something we could never say, that none of us has the right to say, but he, from the depths of the furnace, said, I understand that we are, in part, at least, responsible for this, for having decried and scandalized the builders, we know them as the Zionists, instead of joining hands with them and bringing Kedusha to Eretz Israel. And he, in many ways and in no uncertain terms, despite what some of his progeny would say now, in very, very clear terms, he says that that was a huge mistake, and many Jews would have been saved had Eretz Yisrael been right for them at that point, had we created a culture of Jewish pride by that point. Okay? Why did he call his book Im Ha'anim Smecha? So if you look in the Rishonim on Tehillim, you'll see that one of the suggestions of Rashi Metzudas Tzion is that the Im Ha'anim Smecha, the joyous mother of children, in this context is, obviously it can be taken literally, but the allegorical association is Tzion. You know that in the Shiva Denachemta, when we read the seven parshiot of comfort in the summer after Tisha B'Av, beginning with Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, so we have from the Nevi'im Achronim excerpts about Yerushalayim and the joy of Yerushalayim when we come back, and one of them begins, Rani Akara Lo Yalada. Rejoice, ye barren women who has not given birth until this point. And that barren woman is a reference to Eretz Yisrael or to Yerushalayim. So in his case, what he wrote in his book was, I witnessed, he said, the following scenario. He was the Rav in a town in Pištyn, and there was a family that had a number of daughters. Two of them were teenage years. And they made a decision from family, they made a decision that the father would, in the middle of the night, take the daughters, almost like the closing scene in Sounds of Music, through the backwoods to get into the next town because of all the abductions. And the daughters were prisoners at home, and they just needed to get them to another place. They made that decision knowing that if they were caught, it was the end. So he left in the middle of the night. It was on Chol HaMoed Avichai, one of the Yomim Tovim. This father left in the middle of the night with two of his daughters. The rest of the children and the mother stayed home. And within 48 hours, the mother got word that they had been caught. And she spent the rest of Yom Tov crying. And towards the end of Yom Tov, there were a lot of efforts on the part of the Jewish community in the broader area to do Pidyon Shvuyim, and somebody had connections. He mentions the name of the Rav who had connections and came to the family, and they were able to free this man and his two daughters from the clutches of the authorities who had abducted them. They came back on the last day of Yom Tov, I don't remember Sukkot or Pesach. And he said, and I witnessed with my own eyes how this mother sat on the stoop and she embraced her children as they came back. And she was the Ein HaBan Nisnecha. He says, I imagine, having seen that scene, that that is how Eretz Israel is going to feel when we come back. And until we can anthropomorphize Israel, until we can look at it like the mother of children who have left her, we're never going to feel the way we should feel. The very, very end of the book, I'm killing it for anybody who wants to read it, but at the very, very end of the book, he says, now that I have been zocha to complete this book, I want to tell you that the story I told you about the title of this book, it happened to me, and it was my two daughters, and we came back, and still, having been the one to whom it happened, I tell you that that is no less of a feeling than Eretz Yisrael will feel when we come back to her. Okay? That's the association for Rosh Chodesh. Okay? What I'd like to do now is discuss what it was that he did, how he changed his philosophy, what was the impetus, what propelled him, and how did he do it. He was a genius. He was totally a genius. He had no sparim at his disposal. They were in a loft above a base medrash. They had some chumashim and sidurim, not very much else. He didn't have access to it because they couldn't readily go down all the time. And it was written on scraps of paper entirely from memory. And we know that he had no access to the books because his quotes are often misquoted, an S in the wrong place or a V in the wrong place. But basically, he had total mastery over Torah Shebechtav, Torah Shebaal Peh, and even later Sifrei Machshava. His breadth is what is the most astounding thing to people who read his Sefer. Ultimately, recently, it was annotated so that they updated and corrected all the little misprints. In any case, he tells the following story. He says, when I was young, I came across a letter that really stunned me. And I put it in the annals of my mind, and then it came to the fore when I was going through the fire of the furnace. So the letter was written from the Baal HaTanya, the forerunner of Chabad, Baal HaTanya, to Rav Levi Yitzchak Meberditchev. Rav Levi Yitzchak Meberditchev, we know him as the Sanegor Yisrael. Everybody in fourth grade already hears stories about Rav Levi Yitzchak, that whatever a Jew did wrong, he could turn it around and make it good. He could say how it was amazing, and the Jew who's smoking behind the cart on Shabbos, look how embarrassed he is to violate your mitzvahs. That was Rav Levi Yitzchak. So Rav Levi Yitzchak, this is the very late 1700s, and the Baal HaTanya had a relationship. Okay, now the Baal HaTanya was informed on, Alilot Dam, very similar. In the late 1700s, some informers turned him into the Russian authorities, and he was imprisoned in St. Petersburg, and he was sentenced to death. And somehow, also through the many efforts of the Jewish community, he was freed. And he wrote a letter on the day of his freedom to the Sanegor Yisrael, to Reb Levi Yitzchak, and he said, you know, beautiful terms, very flowery terms, what a day of light this is, and he's so grateful for the Yeshua. And he says, and I understand that my Yeshua came bezchut Eretz Israel, in the merit of the land of Israel. They were in the deep of Russia. Neither one of them had ever been or even thought that they would ever be in Israel. It had been years since any of their family members had been to Israel. And yet, he said, it was bezchut Eretz Israel that I was saved. And he filed that somewhere in the annals of his mind. And then when he was sitting in that loft, he said, I understood what he meant. Because we have a pasuk at the end of the Tochacha in Bechukotai, the Zacharti et Briti Avraham, when things get terrible and it looks like there's no way out, and I've given you every punishment that there is, still, I'm not going to reject you, no matter what. And ultimately, if I don't do it in your merit, I will do it in the merit of the fathers. The Zacharti et Briti Avraham, I'll remember. I think it starts with Yaakov, actually, and goes backward to Yitzchak, Va'af et Briti Abraham Eskor, V'ha'aretz Eskor. Okay? Meaning that when all else fails, says Rav Tachtal, when even our Zchut Avot is used up, Eretz Yisrael is going to be a Zchus for us, no matter where we are. And Rav Tachtal looked at that pasuk, and he looked at his philosophy, and he looked at his writings that he had written against joining hands with the builders, which which means Zionists. And he turned around and said, that was a huge mistake. And then he was motivated by one other thing. And the other thing is what you have on the second page of your handouts now. And that's what we'll, this is the piece of Chumash that we'll learn. This is Parsha. Okay. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Okay, these psukim, we grow up with these psukim. What child has not taken 12 little stones and made one pillow out of it? And what child in sixth grade doesn't know Vayetze Yaakov, and why do they need Vayetze Yaakov? And the parak before it already told us that he left Panaziva, Panash, Shchina, Panahadara, that when a tzaddik leaves the town or the city, all its shine is gone. Okay, he leaves Be'er Sheva and he goes to Haran. Vayifga b'makom. Very unusual word. All the Rishonim deal with it. Vayivga b'makom. What does that mean? Does it not, he didn't reach the town. What does it mean exactly? So vayivga can mean a number of things. Right now we'll say he came to the town. He bumped into the town. Vayivga means to bump into. Okay? Vayalen sham. And he slept there. Ki baha shemesh, because the sun had set. Vayikach me'abnei ha-makom, and he took from the stones of the place. Vayasem mirashotav vayishkav b'makom ha-hu, and he put them around his head or under his head, and he slept in that place. Vayachalom, and he dreamt, and he dreamt about the ladder that was firmly rooted in the ground, whose head was reaching up to the sky. My father always thinks that that's a Torah Mada metaphor, okay? But whatever. V'hine Hashem nitzav alav, and God is standing there, and he's giving him a nevuah. Ani Hashem Elokei Avraham Avicha ve'Elokei Yitzchak, I'm the God of your fathers. Ha'aretz asher ata shochev alaha lecha etnena uzaracha. He is being, the Birchat Avraham is being transferred to him. Okay, the covenant with Avraham, which then went to Yitzchak, that we would be numerous and that we would inherit Eretz Israel, those are the two parts of the covenant, is now being transferred to him. I will give it to you and to your children. And you will be many. That's the other part of the Berchat Abraham. And all of earth will be blessed through you. And this is my deal. V'hine anochi imach. I will be with you. Ushmarticha, and I will guard you. B'chol asher teilech, and all that you do. V'hashivoticha el ha'adama hazot. He's leaving Eretz Yisrael. He says, I will bring you back to this land. Ki lo e'ezavcha, because I will not leave you. Ad asher imasiti et asher dibarti lach, until I do with you what I have promised to do with you. Shad is what I promised in the last two lines. Rash will get. V'ikatz Yaakov mishnato. Yaakov gets up from his dream, and he says, Achen yesh Hashem b'makom. Hazeb anochi lo yodati. This is a godly place, and I didn't realize it. And he says, "Ein zekim beit Elokim v'zer hashar hashamayim." And he proclaims it for all future times as the makom hamikdash. And he gets up and he puts a matseva there by yikrashim hamakom hahu beit el. He calls it beit el, and then he makes a neder. By yidar Yaakov neder lemor. The first thing Rav Teichtal picks up on is lemor. Lemor. When we're little, means saying. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe lemor, right? But when we're a little older, what does lemor mean? To say further. He told it to Moshe to say further to the rest of us. So you have to wonder when it says Vayidar Yaakov neder lemor, and Yaakov made a neder to say, what does that mean to say? And Rav Teichtal says, what it means is to tell us that deal making with God is okay. Otherwise, we would think it's a chutzpah to make a deal with God. And it's a very dangerous thing. You can't make a deal with God. I'll be Shomer Shabbos if you do this, because you can't play with mitzvahs. But you can say, I'll build a yeshiva if you do this. Things that are extra, we can deal make with God. We wouldn't have the audacity to think that unless there was a lemor here. Unless he was telling us, for future generations, this is an okay thing to do. But look at his deal. Im yiyeh Elokim imadi, if God will be with me, Ushmarani baderech hazeh, and he will guard me on this path. Asher anochi helech, v'natan li lechem le'achol u'beged l'lbosh, and he will give me clothing and food and all my natural life needs. V'shachti b'shalom el beit avi, and I will return in peace in tranquility back to the home of my father. Bahayah Hashem li lelokim, and God will be for me for a God. And this stone that I made as a monument, Yebet Elokim, will now become the place of the house of God, Makom HaMikdash. And once I am in Eretz Yisrael, I commit myself to giving Maser of everything I have to you. Okay. Now, this is a very weird kind of deal that he's making from a number of vantage points. What's troubling about the deal?
It's the same deal God gave him.
God just promised him, and it's word for word. If you look at Rashi, turn to Rashi on the next page, on the back page, sorry. So he matches up every single phrase with part of the deal that God made. So the first thing he says, Im yeh Hashem, Im yeh Elokim imadi. And if you look up in Pasuk Tetvav, Vihine Anochi Imach, God said, I will be Imach, Imach imadi. Same word, just a different dictum. Okay? Then the next thing he says, Ushmarani Baderech Hazeh, and you will guard me on this path that I'm taking. Look at the next thing God said. Ushmarticha b'chol asher teleich. I will guard you on everything you do. Now he switches order a little bit, according to Rashi. V'natan li lechem le'echol u'beged lilbosh. And you will give me clothing and food. Now it doesn't seem that God has said that unless you look deeply. Look at Rashi. V'natan li lechem le'echol k'moshe amar. That corresponds, ki lo e'ezacha. I will not leave you. Because we all say, from Tehillim, but we all say it in benching all the time. Nar hayiti v'gam zakanti v'lo ra'iti tzadik ne'ezav. I have never seen a left alone tzadik. V'zaro mevakesh lachem, whose children are asking for bread. That must mean that the word ne'ezav means asking for bread, for life's basic necessities. So when God says, ki lo e'ezavcha, I will never leave you, it's the same as saying, I'm going to give you food and shelter and clothing. So that's also part of the deal that he's making, if you will do that, if you will do something you just promised to do. V'shafti b'shalom el beit avi, says Rashi, but he just said, v'hashivoticha el ha'adama hazot, I'm going to bring you back to Eretz Yisrael, to beit avicha. V'haya Hashem li lelokim. Okay? Now, before we go forward in Rashi, you tell me, okay? I don't have pens and paper, so you're off the hook, and I'm not giving you a grade, so you're really off the hook. But if you're in my class now, I make you make a commitment, okay? Look at the neder that we just read, okay? The neder of Yaakov, Vayidar neder limor. Where does the if clause end and the then clause begin, okay? Where does he stop saying if and he start saying then? Okay, so Vahaya Hashem li lelokim. Okay, that's one approach. Anybody want to suggest something? This is like the best question I could ever ask because you could hardly come up with anything that some Rishon hasn't said. Okay, what makes you say Vashafti? Look at the Lashon, okay? Okay, so there are those who would argue that's part of the if clause, but Roberta is saying that it is part of the then clause. What could support that? In the text, look at the verbs. If God will be with me, Ushimarani, and he will guard me, Vinatamli, and he will give me, then it should be Veheshivoti, and he will bring me back. It doesn't say that. It says Vishafti, I will be active, I will come back. So that's support for that, although that's not the position that Rashi takes. Okay? That's support for that. Anything else? V'ha'evan, because that's the beginning of the next pasuk. V'ha'evan hazot asher samti matzeva. The whole thing is the if clause until that last pasuk that I will build a Beis HaMikdash, or I will consecrate the ground for a Beis HaMikdash. So now let's look at the various Rishonim who say what they say.
Why is the then clause?
So we're gonna look at what.
Then God will be.
If you do all these things for me, then I'm going to make this a Makom HaMikdash.
No, but the same thing. Then I will make you my God.
Okay, so, but what does that suggest?
Till that point in time,
then
he's not
my God.
Right.
Right? So some people have trouble with that.
Right.
Right? Okay. All right. So let's look first at Rashi. Okay, we said... look at Vahaya Hashem li lelokim. Okay, he says that is part of the deal. She'achul shmo alai mitchila ba'atzof. What does it mean that you will be for me for a God? That was the one piece that didn't have a corresponding phrase here. He says, because years before that, at the Bris Milah instruction, God said to Abraham, in one of the four times that he gave him the Brit Abraham, he said to him, V'hakimoti et briti itcha, v'hayiti lecha lelokim ulezaracha acharecha. I will be for you, for a God, the same lashon, and to your children after you. What do the Rishonim say? Shelo yiyeh psul b'zaracha. That you will always have children who will be from. Not necessarily all your children will be from, but you will always have children who will carry on the mantra, the mission, and you don't have to worry about that. The Birchat Avraham will always come forward through your children. So Yaakov Avinu say, you didn't say it to me, but you promised my grandfather that his Zera was always going to have progeny that would carry on this mission, so it's as if you promised it to me. So how does Rashi say this? V'haya Hashem li l'elokim she'achul shmo alai mitzchila v'atzof, that his name should be associated with me from beginning to end, that nothing I do should deprive me of that privilege, shelo yimate psul bizari, that there should never be an invalidating blemish in my children, kemo she'amar, as God said in this promise to Yaakov, he says, asher divarti lach, that I spoke to you. He means that I spoke to your av, lach, about you. About you, the children of Abraham. V'avtacha zu hibtiach l'Avraham she'ne'emar liyot lecha l'elokim u'zaracha acharecha. Zaracha miyuchas, good children, worthy children, shelo yimase bo shum psul. V'ha'even hazot, says Rashi, the then clause begins now. Kach mefarash vav zu shel ha'even, why does he need a vav? Im ta'aseliet ele, if you do all these aforementioned things, va'afani osezot, then my part of the deal is I will consecrate the Makom HaMikdash and make a mitzvah of maser going forward for all the Jewish people. Okay, Ramban, as is Ramban's culture, doesn't agree. Okay, im ye Elokim imadi. Okay, now he's going to deal with the if factor. What do you mean if? God just promised all these things are going to happen. The Ibn Ezra will say, im can also mean when. All right? That's the easiest way to get around this. All right? But normally, when we wanted a when, it would be v'chi or v'chasher. So Ramban is not going to take that approach. And he's going to say what becomes then trademark for Ramban, throughout Ramban, ein haftacha l'tzadikim ba'olam hazeh. God can promise something to a tzaddik, but as long as the tzaddik can fall from his position of tzidkus, the promise is made ba'asher husham. The promise is made to the tzaddik at the level that he's at. If it, not everybody agrees with this, but if he falls from that level, then he's not the same person. It's like the inverse of one of the ways we understand tefillah. If a person davens, it's not that God changes the decree for, God knew all the nitunim. The decree was for person X, and through his davening, he became person X plus one. So now that decree is no longer binding for that person. He gets a better decree. This is the inverse of that. You know, God forbid if he become X minus one, the good promise is not binding. And that's how Ramban sees this. Lashon Rashi, im yishmor li haftachot halalu shehiftichani. Rashi says, if you promise me these promises that you just made, v'tam hatznai shelo yigrom hachet. And how can he say if, when God just promised him? Because he's concerned that he will sin and that he will become less worthy. And then that's where he quotes, elamikan she'ein haftacha l'tzadikim ba'olam hazeh. This is how we know that there is no haftacha for tzadikim. You can't say, I'm resting on the laurels of my promise. It doesn't work that way. Okay? V'haya Hashem li lelokim. Einenu t'nai, k'divrei Rashi. This is not part of the condition, as Rashi said. This is as you're saying it. This is the beginning of the then clause. Now, what supports that from the text? I wrote it in. Because I, in my Bar Ilan, didn't have the punctuation. See that nachta?
Yeah.
At the end of the Shakti b'shalom el beit avi, there's an etznachta, which means pause. That means going forward, we're in a different parsha. So that's what causes Ramban to say, this is the beginning of the then clause. And if you will return me home to the home of my father, then v'haya Hashem li l'elokim. God will be for me for a God. Well, what does that mean? What's going to be in the all the years that he's at Lavan's house? God's not going to be for him for a God? So there are two ways to look at this. Ramban Kedarko will look at it in the very Kabbalistic way, the way that we in the Chutz La'aretz do not like to hear, but Ramban says it, so we'll say it anyway. And that is, you know, Ramban is the one who runs with the idea that there is a Kabbalistic idea, even quoted in the Gemara, that mitzvos here, hatzivi lach tziyunim, that the mitzvos we do in Chutz La'aretz, it's all chinuch. That really, the only place mitzvos have any meaning, I'm not just talking about mitzvot hatzluyot ba'aretz, mitzvot bechlal, the only place they have any meaning really is in Eretz Yisrael, and we do them so that when we go back, we'll be in the role. We'll be in the role of doing them. We'll know how to do them. Okay? Very jarring to a person who lives in Chutz La'aretz, but that's the way the Ramban sees it. Okay? So when he says V'haya Hashem li l'elokim, he says the fullness of your godliness to me, where I am fully incumbent to serve you, that will happen when I come back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And he says that is the meaning, that is the depth of the meaning of the phrase we also don't like to hear, kol hadar b'chutz la'aretz, anybody who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael, domek mi she'en lo eloka, is similar to somebody who has no God. That's like a real ouch in our tradition.
So when Yaakov was leaving Eretz Yisrael, God wasn't his God.
So he's saying that not that he doesn't worship God the same way, but that God's connection to him is not the same. Okay, in the way it appears in Midrashic texts is that the picture that appears so that we can remember it is that all of the lands in this earth have a sar. Okay, there's a body called Samael. They all have a sar, a malach who's their representative. And whenever God has something to do to France, he does it through the malach. If something good to do to France, it comes through the malach. If something bad to do to France, it comes through the malach. And we who live in France are going to end up being the recipients through the channel of the malach of God's good and God's bad. When you live in Eretz Yisrael, and you notice it's a double-edged sword, whatever you get directly. And that's why the tzaras in Eretz Yisrael always seem that much greater. And the brachos and the kedusha always seems that much greater there's no malach. Channel is direct from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's house. So homiletically, if you want to look at it that way, that is what Ramban says the Yaakov Avinu means. When I come back to Eretz Yisrael, V'haya Hashem li l'elokim, you will be my direct God without any intermediary. Sfarnu, as you could see, has a problem with this. And he therefore says something else. We know also, this is the things we grow up with. We don't Girsa D'Yankusa. What's the difference? I could ask anybody in my bat mitzvah class. What's the difference between Hashem and Elohim? Rachamim and Din, right? So he says, V'haya Hashem li l'elokim. What's my deal? While I'm out of Eretz Yisrael, I'm going to need a lot of rachmanis. I'm going to be in mother's house. I'm going to be in a strange place. There's going to be forces against me, bad influences. Do me a favor. Deal with me with rachmanis. But I promise, v'shavti b'shalom el beit avi, when you take care of me and you bring me back to my father's house in peace, V'haya Hashem li l'elokim. Then I will be meticulous about halacha. You can be my God in judgment. You can deal with me lefi shuras hadin, not with mimi shuras hadin, and I will try my darndest to be good. So you see in the words of the Sfarnu, V'haya Hashem li l'elokim, az yeh Hashem l'dayan, im lo e'evdehu b'chol kochi. Klomar hineni mikabel alai me'ata, shehakel yitbarach ha'merachim, once you bring me back, then it's in my court. Okay. Now there is, of course, another way to look at this. We looked at Baha Evan Hazot being the beginning of the then clause. We looked at Bahaya Hashem li l'elokim. The next approach we're reluctant to say because it doesn't appear in the Rishonim. But Rav Tachtal was drawn by it. And that is that it really begins. The Shafti B'Shalom El Beit Aviv, be because of the change in Lashon, because of the active sense. Ushmarani, he will watch me. Vinatanli, and he will give me. Yihye imadi, he will be with me. Vishakti b'shalom el beit avi. So the reason to say it's part of the if clause is because it parallels v'hashivoticha, and I will bring you back. But it's not at all like that, and it's a very clear departure from the way he's saying everything else. And in my mind, what it's going to be is both. That we have to be active, he feels he has to be active, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we are active, b'derech she'adam rotzeh leilech, literally, molichim oto, to the place that a person wants to go, God will lead him. He will end up there. In order to understand, I'm going to come back to Rav Teichmann in a minute, but I'm going to fast forward a couple of decades after him. The Sefer by Rav Baruch David Kahana, contemporary Sefer, written like 30 years ago, Chibat Ha'aretz u'Birkat Ha'aretz, a beautiful, beautiful gift. If anybody, the entire thing, seeing Sukkim in light of a religious Zionist lifestyle and feeling. He takes this sugya in Chumash, and I will never look at it in another way. And the word that he's really going to deal with and branch out of is Vayivga. Vayivga b'makom. And he came to the place. He, you know, so in Rashi it says, there's something bumping into a place, so we talk about Kfitzas HaDerech, that he got there very quickly, or that the time went and it was night by the time he got there because God needed him to lie down there to have this dream because that was the Makom HaMikdash and God brought him to that place and made it happen. And Rav Kahana takes a slightly different approach. By Yifgama Makom, since we have other cases of Lufgoa, such as Al Tifgi'ibi L'ozveich L'shuv Me'acharayich, when Ruth says to Naomi, don't push me to leave you. Don't beg me. Don't beseech me. Don't stand dragging me down to leave you. I'm not leaving you. I don't want to leave you. When one of the Nevi'im, I can't remember now, but I think it's Yeshayah, I don't remember, Hashem says to him, Al tifga bi ba'adam. Don't daven for them, or don't beg for them, because I want to destroy them. Al tifga bi. It means to beg, right? To cry to somebody, to cry your eyes out in beseeching. Hametzapeh lirota, he who yearns to see it, achar sheyatza mimena, after he leaves it, referring to Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu machaziro l'sham, God will return him there. Derech ha'ohavim ha'ne'emanim, it is the way of loyal lovers, of best friends, bihi pardam ish me're'ehu, when they part one from the other, musiba, because of some circumstance that has come about. Did you ever notice siba, circumstance, circum, meaning circle, and sovev, it's really the same word. Bochim umufaisim zelaze, they cry and they appease each other. They make each other feel better about what's going on. It's not going to be so bad, I won't be gone so long, it'll go in a minute, you'll have such a good time in camp, it'll be fine. You know, the way we cry when we part. You ever see the scene at the airport, parents saying goodbye to the kids from Eretz Yisrael, who are leaving to Eretz Yisrael, and then on the way back, the mothers are crying their eyes, and you find out they're going for Sukkos. That's another show. Okay. Bochim u'faisim zelazeh, they cry, and they cry their eyes out, trying to make each other feel better. K'mosha batzinu b'David v'Yonatan. When David and Yonatan have to part, because it becomes clear that Yonatan's father wants to kill David, they cry their eyes out, in the Navi, beautiful words, it's ad David higdil, till David cried the hardest. They were both crying so much. U'chamochein, and similarly, gadla be'enei Yaakov avinu alav ha'shalom kedusha Eretz Yisrael. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was so great in the eyes of Yaakov that he, from the point of view of Rav Teichtal later, he anthropomorphized it. He saw it as a living person. He was leaving Eretz Yisrael, it was no less than leaving his family. Ki b'hagio l'tchum Eretz Yisrael, when he got to the border of Eretz Yisrael, which is now, that's what we're seeing, by Yivga b'makom, it's the end, kaltan nafsho, his heart went out, pardomimeno, at the thought that he was going to leave Israel and didn't know when he's coming back. And he started to appease and to cry to and to express his love for the land. Like, You know, you see pictures of people getting off the plane and crying, and more than kissing the ground, just like davening almost to the ground. That's, he felt it was human. V'livkot, and he cried. U'lahagid sa'aro ki boreachu. And he explained himself, and he explained this, the tsar, the misery that he felt, that he had to leave, that he had to run away. V'liyamim o dibatoba, and that no matter how long he would stay, his words and his thoughts would still be about her, Israel. Adahachi bahachi, by and by, as he's crying, you lose track of time. Shahayamit marmer u'bocher, when he was bitterly crying, u'mifayes al predata, and trying to make Eretz Yisrael feel better about his leaving, i'arev shimsha bivli das, the sun set, and he didn't even realize it. It's not that God brought him to the place and made him stay at the place, you know, and it got dark so that he would fall asleep there because he'd be tired. God responded to his own behavior. He couldn't leave Eretz Yisrael till it got, all of a sudden he realized it's dark and he hasn't made any progress. Then God says, you are worthy of the Berachat Avraham. You care about it enough. You love it enough that I'm going to give it to you. Vayalan sham, ki ba hashamash, because the sun had set out of place. Usually the Vayavo HaShemesh Vayalan Sham. It was a natural sequence of events. The sun set and he slept there. That's not quite the way it happened. He slept there because the sun had set as he was saying goodbye to Eretz Yisrael, and he deserved this dream. V'zesha Amar HaKatuv. Now he's going to explain it. Vayifgaba Makom Vayalan Sham Ki Baha Erev. He confronted the place, he cried to the place, he beseeched the place because evening had come. Vayifga lashon piyus b'makom, he beseeched the place itself. Dafka al shahaya nifrad me'eretz Yisrael makom hakodesh chelik elokam imal. Dafka, specifically because he was parting from a place that was a piece of God himself. V'haya holech el eretz lo mitohara, and he was going to a land that was not pure. U'kmochein harbe piyus v'chiyah, and we have a lot of examples of that in Tanakh. I gave you two, but there are others. Kiderech ohev barea, just as if they were best friends. V'cha'asher ra'a Hashem tokev ahavat Yaakov avinu alav ha'shalom le'eretz Yisrael. And when God saw the potency, the power of Yaakov's love for Eretz Yisrael, shehi chelko yibarach, which is God's beloved, nigla alav. At that moment, it appeared to him, and he said to him, v'hiptiko. He gave him the Haftacha of Avraham, which had gone to Yitzhak. He said, now you get it also. L'hashivo el ha'adam ha'azor. I will bring you back because I see that you will actively work to come back. Okay. That was Rav Teichtel's mantra. That's what the initial source that made him write this book and this reversal. He said, I live in a society, I have professed that philosophy of the Hashibo Sicha, of waiting for God to bring us back, and I ignored the Shavti. I ignored the active part that we have to have. And I now, and he writes to his Talmidim and to anyone who will listen, he said, whether I make it or I don't make it, you should know that I totally reverse everything I said, and you have to join hands with, he never says Zionists, Habonim, with the builders, because he's almost like he's a contemporary, but they didn't live in the same place. He's like a Rav Kuknik. You know, we have a beautiful product. What are we afraid of? If we join hands with them and we bring them Kedusha, it's going to work. And we have to see them for who they are, and that is people of great spirit, with the spirit of Yaakov Avinu for Eretz HaKodesh.
You said you don't do a, with God, a deal. How do you explain it then? If one of the mitzvahs is Yeshua Eretz.
So then, according to Ramban, remember that that's not part of the then clause.
Okay,
right?
So then how would you read it?
So then, Bahaya Hashem Leibav, okay, building the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay, so then deal with me.
So if you do all these things with me and you bring me back,
okay. Yeah,
according to Ramban, it wasn't, Shafti is very, is not a Rishonim idea.
Okay.
So then I will institute Maser in Eretz Yisrael. The Maser comes from. And that was, at that point, that was extra. Okay. Later became extra.
That's beautiful. Thank
you.
I'm Mary.
Hi, how are you?
You're beautiful. Where do you teach?
Brewery High School, Mino High School.
Incredible.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. He's doing Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem.
I have one question. It's Rabbi Tastel. Is his grandchildren not the Baruch Tastel?
Because there's one Tastel teaching in the center.
And now I know why my Lisa always wants to have babies so she can go to the Shia.
Where do you teach?
In Brewery High School and in Miami.
Right.
So that's right.
Right.
Thank you.
It was the wrong shift for my wife to come to.
Sorry.
Sorry. She'll be on the phone today. She just got off the plane. I was home alone 3 weeks. She was there since 3 weeks. I was home waiting for her. This afternoon, she's going to be on the phone.
My time is up. It's going to end. That I grew up with the most different. Like, it is such a fine line. You know, in this audience, in this place, you have so many people who, it's such a difficult choice. What people whose talents are really here and who can accomplish here in a way that they cannot accomplish other, because of the speaking, because of whatever. So what's the right thing to do? So the one thing that I know from the way I grew up, it's most dukna of my grandparents. For 50 years they were here, my grandmother never left Yerushalayim. And it's that yearning that's very dangerous when we lose that. You know, you have to be here, you have a reason, you might be right. You know, but if you lose that yearning, then we can't transfer that to our children. They have to see that it hurts you.
I will tell you, my husband just asked my father, does he think Eretz Yisrael? My father has a number, he was a book involved. It would have ever happened. And he said, no, it would never have happened. Unfortunately, what happened in Europe. But
it's only people like that can say that. Right. You know, I feel like we don't have the chutzpah
to ever be able to
say something like that.
The reason I gave the answer is because I knew that the laning, there's a definite pause right there, and that's...
Okay, so what are you doing?
Right.
You go, well, we're coming here.
Where?
Prince John. My mother-in-law went to Prince John.
I don't have to pronounce it.
And she went, she went 2 or 3 summers for the other, she suffered very badly from arthritis.
Oh, so she went to the mineral bath.
We need to work back there.